The following podcast is a Super Network production and spin-off of the King Zone podcast with the King Zone's Book Club podcast, hosted by Super Marcy.
We know what goes on in these parts near Jerusalem's lot.
And Stephen T. Boltz.
I love this stuff, this world building that he does with literally one sentence. Mm.
It contains adult themes.
Must either be mad or run the risk of becoming so.
Coarse language.
There are huge rats in the wall.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Prepare to take a deep dive into the literary works of Stephen King with us. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the King Zone's Book Club podcast, a wonderful spin-off show from the King Zone podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and it has been a little bit since the last episode. Forgiveness for those listening. Things have been slightly busy with moving and all of life's dramas, but so we are back with episode 5, and I am, of course, joined by my lovely co-host, Stephen T. Boltz. Hello, how are we today?
Hello, I'm doing good today. Doing well.
Yes, indeed. Me too. I'm very excited, actually, for this episode and what we will be discussing.
Yeah, going back to vampires in this one.
Yes, we started with kind of vampires, and now we're in full-blown vampires right now. It's a little questionable at the beginning.
It is, and that's one of the things I want to talk about with the Night Flyer. What did we open with? Jerusalem's Lot was undead Nosferatu, kind of vampires, kind of not. And then over to One for the Road, which was unquestionably a Salem's Lot sequel.
Yeah.
These two stories have no connection to that story, specifically Salem's Lot. But we don't really know where this guy's from or what he's about or even if he's the same guy, to be honest. So I'll let you run with the synopsis, and then we'll jump into it, eh?
Yeah. So I do believe we gave a hint last episode that we will be discussing The Night Flyer and Popsy.
Popsy.
So we will get right into the discussion with The Night Flyer. And I will just read the little thing off Wikipedia. The Night Flyer is a horror short story by writer Stephen King, first published in the 1988 anthology Primeval New Stories by the Masters of Modern Horror, and then in King's own 1993 Nightmares and Dreamscapes collection. And as we know, the Night Flyer was adapted into a film of the same name, which you can hear a wonderful discussion on the King Zone. And the synopsis,
I was going to ask, I thought you guys did that. I thought you guys did that. Yeah. Okay.
Actually, talked about the Night Flyer a few times. yeah. As I said, you can listen to the other show. it is about a reporter called Richard Dees, and he works for a very trashy tabloid called Inside View. And Mr. Dees is on an investigation for what I guess he calls the Night Flyer, which seems to be a serial killer that travels between small airports in a light plane and kills people, and those people do not have any blood left. That is our basic plot synopsis.
Yeah, so like you said, this is the story was published in 1988 in Primeval and later collected in Nightmares and Dreamscapes. Both stories are collected in Nightmares and Dreamscapes, and Popsy follows the Night Flyer in that collection, which I'll get back to when we talk about Popsy, because I had a weird time shift when I was reading these, two stories, but come back to that. So Richard Dees, right? Opens on him. He's talking to his editor. He's talking to Morrison. He works for a tabloid rag called Inside View, And they're one of those, you know, Elvis is an alien papers and that sort of thing that, you know, it's not news. It's not real. It's just, you know, Deese shouldn't even have to leave his desk in order to write these stories, you know, just make the shit up, Rick.
Yeah.
But he does get into it. He starts following these murders of Claire Bowie and Buck Kendall. He's following these murders. And he calls bullshit on the vampire angle right away because, you know, reality, right? So obviously he's like, oh, this is crap. I don't want to write about this, blah, blah, blah. It's a pretty common story where he's, you know, he doesn't believe in the beginning, and then by the end he's proven wrong and everything's real and yada, yada, yada. Mm. And of course, that's the way it was going to go. That's the way it was always going to go. He's following this light plane around from airport to airport, these little airports, and finally catches up with the guy in a men's room. Mm-hmm. He's not aware that the fella is there until he sees bloody urine splashing on the porcelain.
Mm.
And I can't help thinking that was the idea that this whole story was based around. Like, King just fell in love with that image and wanted to know how to, you know, wanted to get a story around that. Because the story, it's kind of like what Harrison Ford says about Blade Runner. You know, he hates Blade Runner. He's like, I play a detective who never did any detecting. You know, this is just all of the action in the story has happened by the time Deese gets on the scene. So there's not a lot of there's not a lot of action or intrigue happening. It's just like, oh, here's a murder scene, and Dee's sort of postulating what had happened. He's always one step behind the guy, and when he finally catches up to him, the guy fucking he takes off. Like Dee's, he never catches him. He, you know, yes, he's got photos, but obviously the guy will show up in photos now. Dee's knows that he's been, you know, everything's been proven real. And I don't want to say anticlimactic ending because it's a pretty cool ending, I got to say. Mm. But there's no real payoff except that Deese knows it's real.
Mm.
Nothing about – now, Deese, I don't know if you know this, Marcy, because you haven't read a lot of the books, but Deese is a character who showed up in King Fiction previously. He's in The Dead Zone. You've seen the movie.
I've seen the movie, yeah.
Okay, Johnny comes out of his coma. They hold this press conference, and this one reporter just gets on Johnny's case. He's like, okay, Johnny, read my mind. And Johnny tells him about his sister. Yes, that's Richard Deese.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and Deese also shows up in the Tommyknockers as well, if I'm not mistaken. He shows up in the Tommyknockers. So Deese is a character who he's been around. Okay, but we know from this that, I mean, he's still working for the inside view. Nothing about this experience changes him whatsoever.
No.
So it's a little, it's one of those moments like, all right, this is tangential and forgive me for this, but Raiders of the Lost Ark, the beginning, Indy is like, that's all mumbo jumbo and nonsense, you know, and da da da. And by the end, He has to believe. He closes his eyes when they open the ark. So he's changed. He does come to believe in this stuff. And the next movie takes place a year before.
Mm.
And he's already shown this. So why at the beginning of Raiders did he not believe in magic and not? He's seen it. He saw it just last year. And I get that feeling with Deese. Like the lesson he learns here is wasted on him, I think. And maybe that's just the point of the character.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Very like well be, actually.
He's like the he's unchangeable. He just comes up against all this stuff and yeah, sure, accepts it, but it doesn't make a dent in his identity, like who he really is. So I'm not sure what I thought of this story in the end. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I guess because I've seen the film, so that's my reference point. And the film
Miguel Ferrer.
Yes. Right?
Miguel Ferrer, yeah.
Excellent performance as Deese. Like, he nailed it. Dee's in the film feels like Dee's in the story. So, like, it does hit a lot of the notes from the story, but the film expands on a few things, which makes it quite a compelling film. And you could kind of see those things in the story. Like, you can look at Dee's as being, you know, a different kind of vampire because he's just sucking his life out of the tabloids.
Yeah.
All of that shit. So that's definitely, you can feel that there in the story, but it's I think it's more subtle in the story. But yeah, at the end of the day, has he really changed? Is he going to learn anything? No, he just knows that this guy is real. And that's pretty much where the story ends, whereas the movie kind of has a bit of a different ending.
Yeah.
which I think suits that material, but I feel like the story itself actually kind of suits how it ends, because after everything you've been through, it's almost like your D's being that one step behind. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
It is kind of interesting because, like, going back to Jerusalem's Lot, where it's not spelled out for you at all, with what the creatures or whatever could be here. Yeah, we know it's a vampire. He goes by it's Dwight Renfield, isn't it?
Dwight Renfield.
So it's an amalgamation of the character of Renfield and the actor who played him in the Todd Browning film.
Yeah. Dwight Fry.
Oh, yeah.
He's not being subtle about it at all.
No, like, it's very obvious. And then when Dee's actually gets those glimpses and tells us what we see, like, yeah, that's definitely a blood-sucking vampire.
Totally classic Dracula stance, you know, with the cape and the
well-dressed
man sort of thing. Yeah,
the well-dressed looking man. And I did notice there was a reference to Jerusalem's Lot in the story. So on page 10, there is a mention of Jerusalem's Lot, but more just in passing. So there is kind of a little wink, wink in there.
Okay, so they mention it specifically. That's cool.
Yes. It did stand out to me, probably because, like, that was one we did look at as well as Chapel 8 and everything else. So you don't forget Jerusalem's Lot.
One of the greatest stories. I mean, that is one of the greatest stories. And he wrote it in college. So it's almost, I don't know. He said of The Stand, when everybody comes up to him and says, oh, I love The Stand. He's like, yeah, that's awesome. But there's something really dispiriting about thinking you did your best work 40 years ago, you know? And I imagine it'd be the same with Jerusalem's Lot, like our praise for Jerusalem's Lot. And he's written like so many billions of words later. I'm intrigued by the Night Flyer in many ways. Like, I don't know why the vampire has to have a plane. Like, why is he going from small town to small town, you know, and killing these people? I don't understand any of that, any of the motivation, but it's not about that. It's about D's. And I find that equal parts frustrating and compelling.
Definitely.
We know
next to nothing about, like, Renfield, because this is from, you know, mostly like D's perspective, I suppose. So we're not going to know anything. We can just assume. Like, why does he do this? Is this his way of trying to be very not conspicuous? Maybe he likes traveling. We don't know.
I'm looking at, you know, Mr. Barlow. Mr. Barlow moves in, takes over a whole town. This guy doesn't have such high ambitions.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Who was he before? It's was he from Salem's Lot? Was he someone, you know, we don't know. And that's interesting to me. And I guess I want to know more. And I guess that's the mark of a good story. You know, it told the story in that it was Deez's story, but it leaves me wanting more. It's really intriguing that way. So I don't know. I dug it, but I walk away from it feeling kind of unsettled, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah, because the small things we do get of Renfield, like, he's kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And that works very well. But it makes me wonder, like, with the character of Deez, is this, like, King being like, you know, if I was really unhinged as a reporter, would I be Deez? And I find that actually interesting to think about, because reading King, there is a lot of himself in everything that he does, which you can see. So is this kind of like, you know, could this have been King in a different, in a like multiverse?
Right. Had he taken the turn and gone into journalism and then
tabloid
fell apart and just became a tabloid journalist.
And just giving a shit more about your Nikon camera than whether you're alive or not.
Like, and I've got to say, not to you know, do a third podcast about the movie or anything, but Miguel Ferrer, the guy just shows up and he's just now suddenly Albert from Twin Peaks wherever he showed up. And it's such a loss to the industry. He was so wonderful. He was so good. And you're right. Absolutely. From the first scene, he nails this character Deez. He really does. Mm-hmm. He really does. So, you know, I dug it. I dug this one. I give this one, what, out of five? I'd go 3.5 to this one. 3.5 to this one. Verging on 4, but I don't do quarters. So I'd go 3.25, but it's more down to 3.5. But I did. I liked it. I dug this one.
Yeah, I liked it as well. And I think I'm on the same rating as you out of 5, 3.5. I think it's a really solid and intriguing story that definitely kind of leaves you wanting more.
Yeah.
And if you want more, the movie's there, because it kind of fills in a few things. And of course, Miguel Ferrer is just incredible.
Fantastic. Well, I got to say, if you want more, apart from Popsy, which we'll talk about in a second, the author Kim Newman, I don't know if you know Kim. I got to know Kim through Blu-ray commentaries and featurettes and stuff like that. And he's so cool. He wrote a short story called You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings, and he uses the vampire from The Night Flyer in that story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and he teams him up with no less than John Rainbird from Firestarter.
Hmm.
They're both working, obviously Rainbird works for the shop, as does this vampire who Newman named Andrews. So he's not going to, I haven't read the story. I found this in the research. So we don't know if Andrews is his real name or yet another name from a vampire movie, but I find it interesting that he's working for the shop.
Mm.
Like, what is a vampire? What?
Right.
First of all, why do you need a job? Okay. You're a vampire. You just go around. I'm going to track this story down. I'm going to read this story.
I actually,
we do an addendum at some point.
Yeah, I kind of want to read it now. I do want to know, like, you know, maybe he's just bored with life and he needs a job.
Right? You know, he needed repairs for the plane.
So. Potentially. I mean, if planes would be like, you know, lots of maintenance. Yes, we will move right along to Popsy. And I'll just read
Popsy.
The short blurb thing from Wikipedia. Popsy is a horror short story by writer Stephen King, included in his short story compilation Nightmares and Dreamscapes, published in 1993. So it doesn't tell us much about it, so I'll do my best to describe
it.
So we have the character of Sheridan, who, as we find out, is a bit of a gambling addict, owes money to the wrong people. A man, simply known as Mr. Wizard, has ordered Sheridan to do jobs for him. Otherwise, he's just going to get the shit beat out of him in all different ways. But however, what Sheridan has to do is basically kidnap children, which one can assume could be for human trafficking or something along those lines. Who knows? Maybe Mr. Wizard is actually... I don't know.
Let's not tug on that thread.
But we'll just assume that sounds right. So Sheridan, as maybe it's stereotype, has a van, lures children in there. But we find him one day, I believe he's at the mall, and he sees a young child, thinking, oh, okay, this looks like a distressed kid. I can probably kidnap this one. But the sickly-looking child is not exactly what he seems. And his popsy may or may not be Dwight Renfield.
Yeah. That's a tenuous connection, I think. Mm. It's a tenuous connection, and I'm not sure. I mean, King has said that it's in Nightmares and Dreamscapes in the notes. King said that Popsy could be the same vampire.
Could be. The description is very similar.
Right, very well-dressed man.
Black cape, the older-looking man. They do reference inside views in the story, I know.
Yeah, that's right.
That is also
so it's
there.
In that universe, right? That's,
yeah.
You know.
So we can assume maybe the vampire is his brother, or it could be him, it could be a cousin.
Maybe vampires in that universe, just that's what they, you know, that's all they know. They dress as.
It could potentially
as,
be.
You know, yeah, yeah. Like, we've got to get the red and black cape. Look, this story was, I remember this story floating around quite a bit before it showed up in Nightmares and Dreamscapes. And it was published in another collection in 1987 called Masques 2, M-A-S-Q-U-E-S, 2. And for the life of me, I always thought it was published after Primeval. I thought it, I remember, and this is yet probably another, you know, another one of those faulty memories, filling in the blanks sort of things. But I remember reading that unequivocally, this was a sequel to The Night Flyer, you know, but it was published a year before. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe it was written after, published before, blah, 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 that they're both tied together back to back in Nightmares and Dreamscapes, kind of, you know, but their Popsy comes second. So if you wanted to put them in order, you would put, you know, but either way, the story is connected to that universe, at least the universe of The Night Flyer. Whether it's an actual out and out sequel, whether it is the same character, even King is being cagey about that, you know, with the, he could be, you know, sort of thing. But this is more of a classic short story where, you know, we meet Sheridan. We know that he's kidnapping kids, but we know at the outset that it's not for himself.
Yeah.
And that sort of, while that makes him, you know, completely reprehensible and definitely the bad guy of the story, he's a pawn.
He's right? a pawn he's, in a bigger you know, he, thing.
He's yeah. doing it because they're gambling debts. He owes $17,000 to Mr. Wizard. So he's out there doing this. This is not the first kid he's picked up, which again puts another mark in the reprehensible column.
Yeah, because you know, he seems a bit of a seasoned pro at this point.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Like we get tips. Let's not go into them in the podcast, but we get tips on how to pick up kids at the mall, which is kind of disturbing. So so we don't like Sheridan, but we like Mr. Wizard less, and I'm left feeling that, you know, Mr. Wizard never gets his comeuppance. He's still out there. And that was unsettling enough, but
I mean, Sheridan, he will just get another Sheridan to...
He'll get another Sheridan, exactly.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Sheridan's not going to be doing much of anything.
He gets the kid into his van, you know, not a white van, but a blue van. So, blue you know... Van. Yeah, pivoting from stereotypical, which is
a little
is,
bit, yeah,
you know, interesting. You know, he gets the kid. He, you know, the kid is crying. He's driving, and then this shape sort of appears in the back, and the shape is the kid's Popsy. You know, who he's been looking for the whole story. Whether it's his, whether that's his father, his grandfather. It's more likely his grandfather. We don't ever know. You know, because again, this story is about Sheridan. He's the D's of this situation. And we still don't learn anything about Popsy or the kid.
No, we just legit know that this kid is clearly a vampire because he bites Sheridan and he has a lot of strength because he's managing to pull the handcuff away from where he's cuffed in the van. And then, like the vampire shows up and he's described very similar to In the Night Flyer. So that leaves us to wonder whether it's Dwight Renfield or This Is How Vampires Are there.
Yeah.
But he pretty much just picked up the wrong kid because the kid just happens to be a vampire. So Sheridan kind of gets this comeuppance, but Mr. Wizard...
He's still out there.
Won't be.
What I love about it, though, is... Okay, so Sheridan's out there and he's picking up kids, but you've got to assume that, you know, we'll call him Renfield just for something to call him, but you've got to assume that Renfield is using the grandson as a honeypot to catch, you know, dinner, basically. Mm. So, but, and he doesn't want to just get, you know, he's like the Dexter of vampires. He's just killing bad guys.
That's how you could take it for sure. Like, they've lured in somebody who's kidnapping kids.
Right.
You know,
I think that's cool. Like, I dig that. And I wish, looking at it from that perspective, I wish that there was some clue that would have led the vampire to Mr. Wizard at the end. Just leave it open, but send him that way. But it was a cool story and much, much more structured. Like, you're in on the action, you're with Sheridan as everything is happening. And he gets his comeuppance, which is wonderful. So I mean, I dug it. What were you thinking?
Yeah, I felt like I don't think this is made like quite as disturbing as, say, Man with a Belly, but it kind of reminded me a bit of it with sort of that very dark undertone, but also somebody kind of being pulled into something. And you could compare Mr. Wizard to the sort of mobster person in the other story. So I don't know, it kind of reminded me of it, even though they're completely different. And there was a little bit that kind of reminded me of The Cat from Hell being in the car with something you think is innocent, but it's not. So it reminded me of a couple of things we've read before. But yeah, it was interesting. It was different. It's very dark because it does involve, you know, the kidnapping of children for goodness knows what.
Yeah.
You know, you can make any kind of assumption you like at this point. But it is structured and it does flow very well. Like, it is a shorter story. But I still found it like quite compelling as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned Man with a Belly there, because I was thinking of the Stephen King crime stories that we did when I was reading The Night Flyer. And how that's, you know, like I mentioned Blade Runner, it's more of a detective story than a horror story, except for the final couple of scenes. So there is some of that Raymond Chandler DNA in there as well. I'm a fan of Popsy more so than The Night Flyer. And I think for that reason, The Night Flyer, it took me an hour and a half to read The Night Flyer. I couldn't tell you how many pages it is off the top of my head, but it took me an hour and a half to read The Night Flyer and half an hour to read Popsy. So it is, you know, it's a shorter story. It's a lot tighter and it just gets there. And I wonder if The Night Flyer were just that much tighter, I might have given it that extra, you know, that extra bump. But Popsy gets 4 stars from me.
Yeah, I think I'm actually on the same wavelength again as you, because I think, 4 out of 5 for Popsy. Not saying like there's anything wrong with The Night Flyer or anything like that, because it is a great story. But I think like you, if it's a little bit tighter, because I think it's about 38 pages, whereas this might be 17, 18 pages or 16, I don't know. Half the size of it. But it, it has a really good flow to it. And yeah, it does have that sort of very dark, like, undertone with the taking of children and some of the things that Sheridan does describe. Like, he's done this quite a bit. Leaves you a little bit unsettled with some of that as well.
It is unsettling. And in large part because of Sheridan, he's sympathetic, but he's kidnapping children. You know, you feel for the guy, but at the same time, you know, stop. You're awful. You are one of the worst people. You are the second rung from being the worst person.
Like, I feel story. Like maybe you would have need to have owed somebody like millions to consider kidnapping kids, not like 17,000 or whatever it is in the story.
Yeah, his soul was worth $17,000. That's kind of sad.
That's very sad. Yeah. But yeah, an intriguing story. And yeah, for those who haven't read them, definitely check them out. And also, I would recommend, if you haven't read The Night Flyer or seen the film, maybe read it first, then see the film. I think that is probably a better order.
That's my recommendation to everything, is like, read the book first. Read the book first. But in talking about The Night Flyer, just circling back to that for a second, is that an example of maybe where the movie is better than the book?
I think the film improves because it does better. Add in
Let's
some
not
extra.
Use better, but yeah, it improves.
I think it does, but it also doesn't taint like what the story is. It just adds, and it still leaves you sort of with a very intriguing ending, but it does fill in some of the gaps. And again, once again, you've got the fantastic performance from Miguel Ferrer, and Dwight Renfield actually looks very terrifying. And that whole end sequence is so well done in the film.
And it's not like Lawnmower Man or anything, like where it's just like, oh, here's 5 minutes of the short story and we're going to make up our own shit all around. What they do with that is they enhance the story.
Yeah, because just about everything in that short story is in the film. There's just more to obviously pad it out as a film, but just add more layers and elements there. And the film, I will say this about the film, it does have some little clever sort of Easter eggs to other Stephen King works, and they're very fun to spot in the film. But yeah
I picked some of those out too. That's fun. That's good. And I do love that. I do love the connection. I love the interconnection of the King universe, except where it comes to the Dark Tower. Don't get me started on the Dark Tower.
We won't go there.
But like, I love just talking about Inside View here, for instance, shows up in like, what did we say? The Dead Zone, Tommyknockers. It's in Desperation, Insomnia, Bag of Bones. I mean, it's all over the place. And it's just this little thing that ties things together. You know, you're in the same universe. You know that. So this story with the Night Flyer and Popsy, these stories, because of the mention of Inside View, we know that Rick Dees exists in that universe. And because he exists, Johnny Smith exists, and Sheriff Bannerman, therefore. And that means that somewhere out there, Cujo, right? And all of this stuff, it just flows. It's so beautiful. I love the universe that he's created, and these weird little things. Like, you read Cujo, you would not automatically assume in that universe that there's a vampire in a Cessna out there, you know, destroying people at little tiny airports, because it doesn't have that.
You could imagine, though, Dees writing about the Cujo incident in the worst possible way for Inside View. So it totally works. It checks out.
It's great. It's so good. So I do dig it. I love both of these stories. I know 3.5, you look at that, you don't think, you know, but in relation to Popsy, it comes in just below. But they're both great stories.
Yeah, both come highly recommended reading from us. And I think that is a wrap on episode 5. So what do people have to look forward to when we are back for episode 6? And I think we'd be looking at around early to mid-November for our next episode.
That's cool. We're going to go back to Lovecraft Country.
Ooh.
In this one, we touched on Lovecraft a little bit before with Jerusalem's Lot. It all comes back to fucking Jerusalem's Lot, Marcy.
It really does.
We're going back a little bit to Lovecraft Country. Like I said, we will look at Crouch End and N. Just the letter N. A short story. N. Yeah.
Very intrigued to read these and discuss them with you.
You'll love
in
these.
A few weeks.
You'll love these for sure.
Very exciting. But yes, to everybody, thank you for listening once again to our book club spin-off series. You can find all your information about the show at supermarcy.com, and you can subscribe to the King Zone podcast feed to get these episodes along with the King Zone, so you get all your King goodness at the one place. So don't forget to do that. And I can be found, if you want to say hi, at Twitter at Super Marcy, and also on Letterboxd at super_Marcy. And I believe, Steve, you are also on the Letterboxd.
I am on the Letterboxd, yes. Yeah, try and find me. I don't have my information at hand.
I believe you're Fultirama.
Yeah, there you go. Find me. Look for me anywhere as Fultirama, and you'll get me. And if you bonus points if you know what that refers to.
He will actually give you those points, by the way.
And no, it's not just Lucio Fulci. Okay, come on, relax.
Relax. Yes. With that said, yes, have a good day, evening, whatever time it is you are listening to us. And yes, until next time, keep reading because it's good for your health. And look out your window for vampires, or maybe out the plane, I don't know. Or in a van.
Wrap it up.
So long. Bye, everybody.
Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN.
Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised.
A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi. So just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show.
Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal.
You can also find the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy shark, do 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 do. Surfy shark, do 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 do.